It's something we take for granted these days, that through our phones or through our TVs, through social media, through all media, through billboards, what, I mean, whatever, by whatever means necessary, there is a battle for our attention. There's a battle for our attention. There's a battle for our eyes and our ears. And I'm not even talking spiritually here, not a spiritual battle, though I don't want you to store that idea away completely either, but simply a competition between companies or celebrities or political parties or ideologies and so on. Real people and real institutions are doing almost anything they can to get more of our attention. Many of you might even work in situations where you are directly or indirectly involved in that battle for people's attention. The data they have is clear, and it's what drives the whole shebang. The more of our attention they can garner over their competitors, the more opportunities they have to convince anyone of anything, and the higher the likelihood of us spending our money, casting our vote, getting clicks or likes or joining a movement or whatever it might be. The days of mass general marketing for vast and broad attention has certainly shifted as our cell phones and the internet have given way to far more efficient forms of targeted attention and messaging based on our age, our gender, where we live, our education, our job, and so many other factors. It is the latest way of turning our attention into profit and gain. Of course, the battle for our attention has evolved. According to one author, what surrounds us today could be traced back about a century to the late 1920s, when printed propaganda was so widely successful in convincing citizens to fight in the First World War. In the aftermath of that war, companies figured that if propaganda could work to make people join a war, then certainly it could be used to sell products and create more demand. And they weren't wrong. But the desire to capture people's attention, to gain mass interest and notoriety, to gather crowds, is something much, much older than that. Perhaps as old as human history. As long as there have been leaders and kings of people, as long as there has been a conviction of a religious truth to share, as long as there has been collective power, there has been the desire to capture the attention of people. Those who want our attention know that our attention is a precious thing. Our attention is a precious thing. So the question has always been, how? How to capture? How does one get a people's attention? And perhaps the key to that is in another question: what do people want to pay attention to? Now, that could be a very long list to compile what people want to pay attention to, but perhaps the most enduring and powerful way to get, perhaps among the most enduring and powerful ways to get people's attention, what people want to pay attention to, is grandeur and awe, something big, something or someone incredible, some magnificent human accomplishment. The Taylor Swift Eras Tour, perhaps. If you didn't know, it's a big deal. Which is precisely what brings us to our passage from Mark today. Now, over the course of the last number of years of preaching to you all, I have tried to describe on different occasions what the Jerusalem temple was like at the time of Jesus's ministry. I've attempted to paint a picture with my words. Well, today I'm going to relent on trying to describe it to you and just show you a video. It's a very short video made a few years ago using a digital recreation of the Jerusalem temple at Jesus's time, based on all the latest historical and archaeological evidence. And I apologize that this won't be on the sermon recording in our website, but if you're listening to the recording right now and would like the link to the video, reach out to me and I'll share it with you. All right, Bernie, so unpause the projector. There we go. Mm-hmm. pause it there, Bernie.
YouTube, if you want to learn more about Herod's temple.
There you go. How's that for capturing people's attention? The size and magnitude of it was astounding. The whole man-made plaza on top, in that last scene, you saw the whole plaza. It was man-made, okay? 37 acres, or 30 soccer fields. The walls of that plaza, the container holding the whole thing up, was made of enormous stones weighing from 2 to 100 tons each. There is architectural marvel after architectural marvel. Even the Roman ruler who ended up destroying the temple in 70 AD said it was the most breathtaking building he'd ever witnessed. And as an aside, if you would like a more comprehensive video of all kind of the intricacies of the temple, I can share that with you later too. The grandeur and the awe of this temple astounded all who came to witness it, even regularly. And even though they had seen it at least annually through their whole lives, the disciples of Jesus could hardly take their eyes off of it in the passage we heard today. Their full attention was given to the structure that stood before them. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." And now you have a good sense of what he's actually talking about. By the way, it wasn't as clean as it looked there back in that time. The constant killing and burning of animals and lots of people made it a little bit more messy and smelly. But it was that big. "Look, Jesus, look at it all. Isn't it incredible? Doesn't it make you proud to be a Jewish man, Jesus? Isn't it such a great building for God? Jesus, look. Why aren't you looking? Why aren't you paying attention to this amazing thing before your eyes?" And with perhaps the greatest buzzkill statement in the whole Bible, Jesus said, "Do you see these buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. It'll all be thrown down." Wah, wah, wah. Across the entire Mediterranean, perhaps the whole Roman Empire at the time, there may not have been a single structure more striking than Herod the Great's Jerusalem temple. It was huge, it was beautiful, and it was holy. It demanded everyone's attention, but not Jesus's. But not Jesus's. While everyone looked with mouths and eyes agape, Jesus looked away. He paid no attention. He ignored it. He was indifferent to it. Now, there is a kind of intentional indifference or criticism that many people might perform as they try to ignore something out of a kind of jealousy or envy, something that comes from a fragile ego. Perhaps that would be the most relatable way of understanding Jesus's indifference to the temple, something like, "This ain't that special. I could build that. It's not so strong. Look, I can push these over. Not one stone will be left on the other." But something tells me that's not exactly where Jesus' indifference and inattention to the temple came from. It wasn't a matter of Jesus' fragile ego. I think it had far more to do with the fact that Jesus knew how truly precious our attention is and where that attention leads, and what the attention of the temple was demanding of all who looked with complete awe. That temple was everything to the people of Israel, everything. Their lives and identities were wrapped up in it. The attention, the looking, the gaze, the pride, it was the hope of the people. As a human structure that indirectly symbolized the might and power and holiness of Israel's God, the attention drawn to a structure like the temple was also indirectly related to the attention that was drawn to the people who worked for the temple and the power and honor and holiness that was given to them. You might remember a short parable that Jesus told in the book of Luke about a Pharisee and a tax collector going to that temple to pray. He told them, "The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying, 'God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted. Everyone paid attention to the religious leaders. Everyone looked at them, and they dressed as though you were supposed to look at them. And everyone scorned the tax collectors. But Jesus was telling them, don't pay attention to the Pharisee, pay attention to the repentant sinner. Don't look there, look here. Don't pay attention to the self-righteousness of the Pharisee. Don't pay attention to the grandeur of the temple. Perhaps what Jesus in fact reveals is that so much of what so naturally draws our attention is in truth a distraction. That so much of what so naturally draws our attention is in truth a distraction. Perhaps Jesus' indifference to the temple was a revealing that so often our eyes are drawn astray by things that seem so good and amazing, but that don't point us towards real, true life. And that true attention isn't something that is so easily captured by human power and grandeur and glory. Simone Weil was a Christian thinker who spent a bit of time exploring this kind of attention. As a young French woman who worked in the industrial factories during the early 1900s, Simone Weil had a sense that this growing technological power was a kind of threat to overwhelm real humanity. And so over and against that impersonal technological ideal, she helped to define a Christian ideal using a French word, which is difficult to translate because it means two things in English. Attente, meaning both waiting and attention. Kind of a mix of both these things. In the words of Rowan Williams, quote, it's the kind of waiting experienced by a bird watcher. I love this image. You have to be very still, relaxed, and focused all at the same time. Heightened attention, end quote. This kind of attention, or attente, is a kind of expectancy. Whenever I say a French word, I have to do this. Attente. It's a kind of expectancy, but not the kind of tightly wound concentration born out of strain. It's not the kind of waiting and attention you might have as you wait to give a surprise birthday party where you're waiting in the dark, surprise! It's not that kind of attention. Her best known book was the title Attente de Dieu, Waiting on God. Waiting on God, where she explores how the essence of prayer begins in attention, in waiting attention, and this involves a kind of selflessness. You put your thoughts and your anxieties on the back burner and open yourself to what's truly there before you. After all, the most basic and stripped down kind of attention that we have, the kind that the grand, distractible attention of the crowds and masses is built upon, is the very basic attention one individual can offer another individual as they listen and converse and relate. The attention given between friends or between a parent and a child. Listen to my words. Listen to my words. I think this kind of attention that Simone Weil explored was what Jesus was pointing to. Over and against the kind of distracted attention the disciples were caught up in, that we all are so easily caught up in. But of course, Jesus's comment to his disciples about not one stone being left upon another wasn't only a comment of indifference to the temple, but a kind of preparation of what was to come. And that certainly caught the disciples' attention as well, because what he was describing was nothing short of perhaps the most terrifying, traumatic day in the history of the nation of Israel. If there's anything that might beat out the attention-grabbing nature of awe and grandeur and beauty, it is fear, terror, violence, and destruction. Jesus' warning of such a day that would come in 70 AD, when their precious temple was destroyed by Rome, drew the disciples in as they sat across from the temple on the Mount of Olives. Tell us, Jesus, when will this day be? What will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished? But Jesus did not answer that question directly. Instead, he told them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he.' And they will lead many astray. There will be those who come. There will be those who know how to so powerfully capture the attention of the masses and harness fear and revenge and violence against others. But when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed or disturbed or agitated or troubled. Don't let that fear and violence move you. Don't let it convince you that love is to be set aside now for violence. Don't lose yourself. Don't be distracted. Breathe. Breathe. Pay attention. Attente. This must take place, but the end is still to come. It isn't the end of all things. There will be another day. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is just the beginning of the birth pangs. Just pay attention, not to all that, but to this, to what is before you. Don't get distracted. I take Jesus' words to his disciples as a warning to be careful about the kind of attention we all give, not only to the seemingly beautiful and awesome and saving and powerful things, but also to the seemingly terrible and frightening and violent things. Don't be distracted by it all. Don't be sucked into some cataclysmic thinking that jars us off the unchanging path of the follower of Jesus, of true patient attention, of self-offering love to God and to neighbor. We live in a fog. We live in a fog. The current and non-stop battle over our attention has left us seemingly more distracted than ever. There are many who demand our attention, our likes, our clicks, our votes. There are many who come and say, "I am he," or "I am she." We've seen it. There are those who try to grab our attention through flaunting power and strength or moral righteousness or making promises of all kinds. There are situations that grab our attention through devastation and calamity and violence. And if we aren't distracted by it all, if we aren't paying real and true attention, we can very easily be moved into joining the angry mob or unsheathing our swords and cutting off our enemy's ear, biblically speaking. If we aren't paying real and true attention, we can so easily forget our calling to healing and love, even the love and healing of enemies, even in a violent time. Don't pay attention to the grand temple. Don't look there. Look at just outside those huge walls, just outside the city, to the garbage heap where they're torturing criminals. If you look there, on a cross, if you pay close attention, you'll see God. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.